I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is Words on a Wire former co-host, Benjamin Alida Sainz. He is well known to many people on this show and certainly well known to people in this region. He is a novelist, he's an artist, he's a poet, and he taught creative writing here in our department at the University of Texas in El Paso for over 23 years. And then, to the chagrin of all his colleagues and students, he decided to take an early retirement. And now he writes and he tours his books and he's very happy. And I asked him if he would join me for a special interview on Words on a Wire. And our producer, Lauren Tarazas, and I allowed the conversation just to move on. It went on for for longer than the 30 minutes that were allotted every week. So we decided to just do it in two parts. Benjamin Sainz is the publisher of, I frankly lost count, 20-something books of fiction and poetry. I remember his one of his very first books that he published. It was called Flowers for the Broken, and I was a young Chicano writer living in California, and in my little city, it was Modesto, California, a former student of mine opened up a Chicano bookstore. It was the only one in that area, and unfortunately, it's not there anymore, and I don't think there are any that replaced it, but he had a lot of Chicano literature on the shelves, and I remember going through and seeing Flowers for the Broken by some guy named Benjamin Alida Sainz, and I bought it, and I read it, and I was hooked ever since. He is an amazingly talented writer. He's passionate. He has won more awards than I could list. I mean, what comes to mind, the Lambda Literary Awards, the Penn Faulkner Award. He has recently published two books in 1 year, which kind of is a thing with Ben ever since I met him. He publishes an average of two books a year. His latest books are The Last Cigarette on Earth. It is a book of poems put out by a local press, Cinco Puntos Press, and The Inexplicable Logic of My Life, which is a YA novel and already a bestseller. His other recent books are Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, He Forgot to Say Goodbye, Last Night I Sang to the Monster, Carry Me Like Water, Imperfect Light, Elegies in Blue, and I could go on, but we only have limited time, but I could actually do a whole show just mentioning the titles of his book. When I started teaching here at the university, Ben and I became very close friends. And when I thought about the idea of this radio show, Words on a Wire, it was Ben that I talked to. And so he was my co-host for the first several years. So you should be familiar with him. We're going to listen to the first part of the interview. And then next week, we'll play part two. And we're going to talk about his work, his life, and all kinds of other crazy things that writers think and talk about. So here it is, my interview with Benjamin Alida Sainz. Ben, welcome back to, what is it, Studio B?
Studio B.
Studio B. I remember we used to start the shows every week. You would say, I'm in Studio B sitting next to my good friend, Daniel Chacon. And I would say, that was funny.
It was fun.
I haven't even referred to this as Studio B in since then, when we first started the show. And we would come in here once a week, record a show. Do you miss it?
Actually, it's so funny because when I was walking on campus, I'd forgotten, like, you can't park, I can't do this. And I'm rushing, walking through campus, and it's so beautiful.
Right.
And I was remembering, this was your idea to start Words on a Wire, and how you just made that happen. And I just went along for the ride. And people would tell me, they would give me a lot of credit. And I would say, actually, Daniel does all the work.
Well, we worked on it. You booked as many writers as I did, and we had some good guests. It was fun.
It was fun. And when I came in here and saw you, it is like being home again.
Yeah.
Because it's so familiar and there's a sense of belonging.
What's like being home again? Being on campus or being in the studio?
Both.
Because you retired.
I haven't been on campus maybe once since I retired.
Is this your first, this will be your second
My
full
second,
year
of your second year of full retirement. Year of retirement.
Are you enjoying it or are you thinking, man, I got to get back in the classroom. What am I going to do with myself?
Oh, no. I'm busy. My life has always been very full. And when I'm not doing one thing, it gets filled up with something else. And obviously, one of the many reasons, I had many reasons to retire, was that I just couldn't teach and then do the things we have to do as professors because we don't just teach.
Right.
And then travel and doing all that traveling and write.
Right.
I just couldn't do it and something had to give. And I realized that I could retire and I did. And I do miss the classroom. It's one of the few things I really miss,
mm-hmm.
The actual classroom experience. But I get that because I do a lot of visits. And when you publish young adult novels, one of the ways that they market them is you go into schools.
Right.
You just don't go to a bookstore and sign. You do that at the end of the day. During the day, you go to schools and you talk to kids. And they're not as mature as college students, though sometimes they are.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, I get that kind of question and answer and interaction with them, which is great.
So you're almost, it's almost like you're teaching anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's the fun part of teaching, right? Is talking to students, people who are really eager to absorb something.
Right. So I'm doing a lot of that. And I didn't do as much outreach to high school students as I did before, but now I'm doing that. And it's really important because they're at an age where they are still, even though juniors and seniors are smart alecks, but the readers are very, very sincere, and they consider themselves very hip. In fact, they're
right.
Dorks, and they're beautiful.
Right. And you know what I like about young people is they don't, they see right through the BS.
They do.
And they know if you're authentic.
And I talk to them about things that are important that they may not hear about. I talk about what it means like to be a gay man. I talk to them about my experience as a Mexican-American in this country. And they don't get to hear about those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I also talked to them about the struggles I've had with drug abuse. And I talk to them about all of those things, and I don't shy away from it.
Right.
Because people don't talk to them about those things. And they want to know. And I tell teachers and administrators, I'm going to talk about things that are important that they should hear.
Right.
That I think that they want to hear. And they do. Because I start talking about those things and write. As soon as you open up for questions, every hand goes up. It's incredible.
Well, those two issues alone, being a gay man and having experienced addiction, I imagine would eliminate you from being invited to some schools in particular areas.
But, you know, there's a lot of teachers and a lot of administrators who think these things are important. And they want to have open discussions with them. And one of the reasons they invite me is that I get to do that with them.
Right.
Even though maybe if they had those discussions, some parent would jump down their throats.
Right.
But I can go and talk about these things because I'm just a visitor.
You know, one of the things that I really admire about you is no matter what's going on in your life, you write. You're always writing. I remember, you know, joking a couple of times, Ben, you only had 2 books come out this year because you write a lot. And so going back to what you were talking about when you were juggling all these roles that you had to perform as professor and as a department chair and writer and did you put writing first? What was your day like? What was your first commitment?
Writing. Sometimes I could be falling apart, but I would say when I'm writing, I'm actually not thinking about the fact that at that very moment I'm a train wreck or the debris from the train wreck. It's how I feel. But I don't think about it because when I just sit down to write, and it's the only one thing that I do that why I'm instantly present. I don't have to like work into it. I turn on my computer or laptop. I see where I left off and I just go and I'm just there. And anything else, if I forgot to do it, well, I'll deal with it when I stop writing.
Wow.
And I don't think about it. It just doesn't occur to me to think about anything else. And I learned to do that because when I first got a job here at UTEP, I realized that the world isn't going to make time for me to write. It's not going to happen.
The world, if it had its way, would take away your time.
Yeah, because there's other demands. Will you do this? Will you do that? I'm not good at saying no. I'm not. And I found myself my first year not doing a lot of writing because there was a lot of demands on me and I kept saying yes. And a lot of things. And then I said, where are my priorities? And for instance, I even went so far as sometimes, you know, I would not attend the meetings that I was supposed to attend.
Right.
One of the reasons was, frankly, I didn't think that the people on the committees wanted to hear my opinion. So it was a waste of my time and a waste of theirs. And I said, well, I'm not going to put it on my PARF. I was assigned to these committees. I didn't go. It not going to be on my performance sheet because I didn't do it. I'm going to write. And I did that. And I made it a priority. And sometimes a lot of my colleagues didn't appreciate it because I wasn't pulling my weight. But I decided, too, that, look, I'm a writer. I'm going to make time to write. When I don't write, they're going to be asking me, you want tenure? Why aren't you writing?
Right.
And so I did that. And then I really took off.
Let's go back to that. How you say when you start to write, you just forget about everything. And so say there's a meeting you're supposed to go to, and you might feel a little guilty. When you start writing, that guilt just disappears, and you're completely absorbed in the work. Or let's say you your life is all messed up, and whereas you could contemplate on all the ways that your life is messed up and that you've messed up, that disappears too. You just completely are there. And I'm kind of thinking about how we read novels. When we read novels, one of the most pleasurable aspects of it is that everything disappears and we are completely in that landscape and completely in that world. And it sounds like that happens to you in your own fictional landscape, your own creative landscape. You just are there with your characters and everything else disappears.
Right. It does. And when I go through bouts of insomnia, as I sometimes do, I get up and write. Because what happens with those bouts of insomnia when you can't sleep is that you start making a list, and you don't even want to do it, of all the ways that you screwed up your life. Every person you've ever hurt all of a sudden appears on the list, and you start feeling bad. And you're not solving any problems, by the way, and you're not really meditating on your life in a productive way. So I start going there, and I say, shut up, Ben, and I get up, and I write. I'll make decaf, because decaf still has a little
little kick to it.
And I make some decaf, and I sit down, and I write.
And it all disappears.
And it all disappears in an instant.
Wow.
In an instant.
You know how I picture it? I picture like you're sitting there, you know, you're beginning to write, and then the walls just kind of start fade away, and they give in to the landscape that that your characters are in.
Yeah, it's so funny, because I have this thing about making the place where I live into something beautiful in the sense that I can feel comfortable,
right.
And I think space is important. And I spend all that time my office now is just beautiful. I made bookcases. It's just wonderful. I walk in, I smile. And yet when I start writing, I'm not even aware of the fact that I'm in the room.
Right, right. Well, that's a great place to be. You know, ever since you started writing, I don't know, what was your first book? The very
Calendar
first
of
book.
Dust.
Okay, Calendar of Dust. That was a book of poems, and it was, I think, Denise Levertov wrote the introduction to that,
yes,
right?
Yes, she did.
I mean, very successful book of poems. And then your first novel, was it Carry Me Like Water? You got that amazing book contract from a trade publisher. So you've always have had success as a writer. I mean, since your first book to now. But your success lately has just, you know, it's like success on steroids.
Yeah.
Why do you suppose that your work now is just suddenly getting much, much more attention than it used to? Although it did get attention before, because like I said, you've always been successful. But now there's like this you're a phenomenon, especially with your YA novels. Why do you suppose it's happening, and why now?
I think it's timing, Daniel. I think that kind of synergy or, kind of perfect storm things happen when different things are all happening and they all converge, and there's like this kind of explosion that happens. And sometimes it's bad and sometimes it's good. You know, it wasn't just that I wrote my last two books, because that kind of explosion happened with Everything Begins at the Everything Begins and Ends at the Kentucky
Club. Right, that collection of stories which won the Penn Faulkner Award.
And then Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe. Now, they came out the same year, and that they came out the same year as an accident. And it didn't matter because it wasn't competing markets, so neither of my editors minded. that's just the way it was. And what happened was, when Aristotle and Dante came to press, we were right in the middle of a discussion of gay rights and gay marriage and the gay issues entirely, because gay marriage brought up this entire kind of public discussion about gay people and queer people and lesbians and just people who had alternative sexual identities. It brought up those issues, and it was a public, a national discussion. My book was published right then.
So that was luck.
We didn't plan that.
That was luck.
You can't plan that.
Right.
If you're going to write an issue book, because right now we're having a discussion about this, you're already too late.
Right. By the time it comes out, the issue is people are talking about something else.
Yeah. And so that can't be planned. And so I think there was a groundwork laid for a book like mine. And I think also because what made my book different, I mean, I wasn't the first writer to or a gay person to write a book about gay characters, young people, but it was different than theirs. It was different, and yet mainstream publishers loved it. Something about the way that I presented the material. It was two Latino boys set in 1987 in El Paso, Texas. Now, you imagine me going, I'm not a well-known writer, and I'm going to pitch a book to an agent. You know, take me.
Right.
My book is about two boys, Aristotle and Dante, and they live in El Paso, Texas in 1987, and they fall in love. What do you think? They're not going to buy that book.
Right.
They're not. Everybody buys that book. And it's interesting because—
Is it your most successful book at this point?
It is, by far, by far. Probably sold about 400,000 copies.
Wow.
And it's published in 19 languages, and it's still very strong. And I think a lot of people in the publishing YA world feel that that book is a game changer. Mm-hmm. And they tell me that. And another agent told my agent, not knowing that she was my agent, said to her, I really am looking for this, you know, something different, something new, you know, something like Aristotle and Dante discovered the secrets of the universe. You know, it was this agent. And then Patty didn't say anything. But that book was a surprise. It was a surprise to everybody.
Was it a surprise to you, the success?
Yes. Because, you know, Daniel, my writing has always been like, I always sell enough copies to live to write another day. And that's all that mattered.
There's a quote for you. I always sell enough copies to live to write another day. That in itself is success for a writer.
So, but when it explodes that way, because the first explosion was it won all those awards from the American Library Association. Mm-hmm. But there's always that always settles down, you know. It's selling as much today. And you know who sells it? The kids. Word of mouth.
Right. I went onto your Twitter page, and a lot of people leave comments. And here's one of your Twitter followers says, "What I would give to write a novel as moving as Aristotle and Dante discover the secrets of the universe."
I know. I get great letters from kids, from mothers, from gay men my age, all the time. Like, I get several a week still, and it's like almost 5 years after its publication. It's like people are still discovering it. People are still reading it. There's another kind of downside to that. My latest novel, The Inexplicable Logic of My Life.
Which is also doing incredibly well.
It's doing really well, but a lot of people said, well, it's not as good as Aristotle and Dante. You know, makes me crazy. But you know what? Still. And people don't think it's as good. And they even say, even the writing is not as good. Well, that's ridiculous.
It's a different book.
And they want that again. And I'm not going to get, I don't write the same book again. I just don't. And it's not interesting to me. But yet, there's a lot of other people that also say, I like this better than Aristotle and Dante.
Let me read another tweet about you from one of your followers. It says, as you can clearly see, Benjamin Alida Sainz is the best human being that's ever walked the face of the earth.
You know, they're kids, you know, and they make me smile.
But you touch this person so much that she would go on line and make that comment.
Yeah. Well, they romanticize about their heroes. So, right. You know, I really am touched by it, but, you know.
Right.
You know, one of the things that you have to deal with, you know, I never wrote to be admired. I don't like to be admired. And so you want to admire me? Let me tell you about my life. Let me see how much you admire me then. Because I'm just a human being and I don't pretend to be otherwise. But it's also to be gracious when someone gives you a compliment. And this lady once taught me a nice lesson. She says, I loved Names on Another. I loved it. It was, the writing was so beautiful. And I said, oh, you're very kind. And she says, you don't know me. I'm not kind at all. She says, when someone tells you that you're a good writer, you should just say thank you. She was no nonsense, you know. And it was like, and she taught me a lesson that if someone gives me a compliment, I say thank you.
Right.
I don't tell them they're kind. I don't, you know, they're not doing me a favor. They're not being nice to me, although they are being nice. If they tell you they love your book, they're telling you they love your book. Take it at face value, man.
And you know, there's also that idea that, you know, all things... To a measured spiritual being, as I think this is a Buddhist idea, you know, all things should be equal, whether it's praise or criticism, that you should take them kind of equally. But there's also this phenomenon, you know, today with Twitter and with Instagram and with all these social media outlets and all these abilities to comment directly to a writer or to a public personality, this phenomenon of if you are loved, you're probably going to be hated as well. There's going to be haters out there. There's going to be people who troll you in negative ways. Do you find has that happened to you as well?
It's happened to you. But, you know, since I don't live there anyway, you know, I live in my writing with my friends in the real world. I throw out the trash. I'd walk the dog if I had one. You know, that's my life. It's okay. I like that about my life. It's just ordinary in many ways. Although some people would say, Ben, there's nothing ordinary about your life, but you know, well, that's a different discussion. But, you know, if someone, I know some people who say, and I know some, I had some fans, Chicano fans, who don't like my work anymore.
Right.
Because they are simply not interested. They'll say that to each other.
Wow.
And then it gets back to me. And it's like, okay, well, I can't imagine me dismissing a writer because I'm not straight. And so, you know, if you think about the way that you sometimes, talked about, you think, well, that's ridiculous. It's not even a conversation. I don't spend any time there. I know some people in the Latino literary world that said, he won't defend Faulkner because he's gay. And, you know, okay, that's the reason. You know, I'll let the judges know that's why they picked me. You know, and you know that people do get jealous about that, and I know that. And I mean, I've won a lot of awards, and sometimes it's embarrassing. But I don't give myself those awards, and you just don't blame me.
Right.
You know, I do say that was really nice. That was really nice that they gave me this award. I should say thank you. You know, I don't think that I'm the greatest writer that ever walked the earth. I think I'm a good writer, and I'm real committed to my craft. You know, I love to do it. I don't write. You know. I never thought that I would reach that kind of success. Sometimes it's like weird to me. It is weird. Sometimes when you know, I live off of my writing and I get a check and I can live really well on my writing. And I look at it and I say, this is insane. I tell myself, this is really insane. But I think sometimes it because you work for a dream, and you live the dream and you start going to places like, oh, I don't deserve it. Oh, this and that. And so you can take yourself to a place that you don't enjoy your success. And I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm right. Really grateful for everything I have, for all of my faults, for all of my flaws, and all of my struggles. Everything I have, I've come by honestly. And I can say that. And I can sleep at night. And a lot of people can't say that. Not only honestly, but by doing something I love.
Right.
Which is amazing to me. It is a miracle, Daniel. And I am so grateful. And I am. I don't take it for granted at all. I don't often, you know, it's funny. I'm talking about my work. I don't like to talk about my work. Because, you know, it's just... I don't know.
I'm gonna contradict you, Ben, right there. I'm talking to Benjamin Alida Sainz, undoubtedly one of the most successful writers to come out of Studio B. You don't talk about your work once it's published, but while you're working on it, it's almost all you can talk about.
I know. That's true. It's true. But only my friends hear that.
Right, right.
And only certain people.
But you know, I learned so much from that, because when I'm working on something, or in the past, I'm not that way anymore because I followed your example. When I was working on something, I would think, well, I shouldn't talk about it. And maybe not at the level of I'm going to jinx it, but probably on some superstitious level, I should probably just keep it in until, you know, let it come out on paper. But when you would work on a novel, you would tell me about the characters, you would tell me what's going on. And so I knew your novels before they even came out. And I found myself allowing myself to talk about what I'm working on with friends. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't do it on the air, or I wouldn't, write a blog about what I'm working on. But I find it really helps, because it reinforces one of the qualities I think of your success, and that is you believe in your work. You deeply believe in your work. Even if you don't believe in Ben sometimes, you believe in your work.
I do. I do. I do believe in my work. And, you know, when I do something, I'm in. That's not always a good thing. Because, like, you know, you can be in, you know, you said, I'm in 100% here. And it's like, what are you doing with your life here, Ben? But I'm in. And so what is it going to take to be a writer? And what is your idea of a writer? Some people's idea of a writer is that, oh, I'm going to be the next John Irving. That wasn't my idea of being a writer.
Right.
You know, I didn't imagine this. I thought, you know, I want to be a poet. I want to, you know, live in that world. I want to live that kind of life. So it wasn't about success. It was about just being a writer. And being a writer meant to me, you read a lot, you write a lot, you teach, and it's like you have this great life. And that was my idea. So it wasn't like, mm-hmm. I didn't have this glamorous idea of what a writer was at all. And what is it going to take to do that? Because I said, if it's not going to be about money and selling, it's got to be about your art, period, and your ability to make time to do that and have some kind of readership to continue to doing that serious literary work. That was me. And so what does that take? And I said to myself, it takes discipline and desire.
Right.
I think I'm a good writer because I wanted it. I still want it. I'm writing the sequel to Aristotle and Dante, and I'm still hungry like a young writer, like I don't have any success at all. And I write like that. And I said, if I can able to keep that, then my writing will stay at least fresh and honest. And that's all I wanted to do. And I had the discipline and I had the desire. And I remember being a Stegner fellow, and there's 8 fellows every year. And there's 2 years, so there's 16 people because you stagger.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking in the room at a reception once, and I knew their work, and I'd read it, and I was a workshop with some of them. I said to myself, I am the least gifted of all of these people, but I wanted it more than they did.
Wow.
And I am more successful than any of the people. I was a Stegner fellow. Why? Because I'm more gifted? No. That's not why. I wanted it.
And that was Benjamin Alida Sein talking about want, that desire to write, that desire to create novels and poetry, which a lot of us, listeners and people who have been on the show, we understand that desire to write. It's like, if you could not write, you're probably not a writer. If no matter what, even if you try to give up writing, you can't do it, well, you're probably a writer. I'm Daniel Chacon. Join me next week on Words on a Wire when we will finish up this interview with Benjamin Alida Sein.